Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their very own mouths. My guest today, former BYU men's basketball player and current radio color analyst, he is the great, and I want to underline in bold, italicize, I think that's how you say it, Mark Durant in the house. How are you, Mark?
Man, I want you to write my tombstone, man. That sounds pretty good. I'm doing great. I love seeing you and love being here. You're my good friend, and we've known each other a long time, and I'm honored that you'd have me on.
Well, I will tell you, I think we all have, there are certain people that we're used to seeing in a certain setting, right? And so when you see them out of that setting, like I'm used to, if I see you, we both have headphones and a microphone, or I'm filling in for Greg on the men's game, and so we see each other that way. We occasionally get to see each other when we get the basketball barbecue at your house, which we always love. But usually when I'm in this room doing stuff on the radio, I don't get to see you. All I get to do is hear you. So to actually see you while I'm in this room, it's kind of freaking me out.
You're going to make it through it because you're a professional. You'll be able to overcome that. But it is nice being next to you, whether it's when you are calling a game. That's always fun.
We always get good ones.
We have had some amazing memories, like some of the all-timers. I always feel a little bit bad for Greg because he seemed to get the kind of the close games and the big wins. But those are always fun, so we've got some great memories. And we need to do more of the non-radio headset stuff spend more time just hanging out because that's a good time.
Yes, it is. We have so much to get to with you. Most people, certainly over the last 25 or so years, I'll let you give the exact number, know you as a basketball analyst. That they hear you on the radio with Greg, and that's how they know you. When did that opportunity present itself?
Yeah, so I played. My first year was the 89-90 season with Marty Hawes and Andy Toulson, Steve Schreiner, and that great group. Went on my mission to Kentucky and came back and played with Gary Trost and Jared Miller and Russell Larson, Kevin Nixon, Reed Brothers, Nick Sanderson, Kenneth Roberts. Go down the list. So that was my era, and Paul James was calling the games. Paul had some health issues around basketball just as I was finishing up. And I always loved to go on after with Paul. And he seemed to, he had me on more than my share because I think we had a good relationship and had a lot of fun on the radio. And so, Greg, when Paul retired from basketball, Paul Ruffner also decided to stop. He was the color commentator for Paul. And so Greg was looking for someone. And I was, as you might remember, Jason, was a pretty mediocre average basketball player. I played hard, but I wasn't a superstar by any means. And so typically when you're looking for a color commentator, you really want kind of a big name and, Greg, I think, had reached out to some of those guys and they were unable to do it. And I, through the grapevine, said, hey, if Greg asks you about it, tell him I'm available. I'm here. I enjoy doing it if he's interested. And he was, and he called me. We went out to lunch one afternoon up in Salt Lake City, and I always say it was love at first sight. We just hit it off and had a great conversation. After the lunch, he said, let's do this, and I was excited to do it. And then the rest is history. 28th season together. Greg could correct me if he was here, but I think it's 28, which is a long time. I'm tired thinking about that.
A lot of basketball games in 28
years. Please release me from this, Greg. But no, I, Greg has been tremendous to me, and as you know, working with Greg, no one better in the business, and I've learned a lot from him, and it's just been an absolute joy and honor to call the games for BYU basketball, which I love, ever since I was a boy. My first memories are BYU basketball, so for me to sit on the front row and associate with these young men and these great coaches and people like you and Greg, it's just been one of the real highlights of my life. And so I'll keep doing it until Greg either retires or they get tired of me, which could be very soon. and that's fine, but I've surely enjoyed the time that I've done it.
That's interesting. As long as I have known you, I did not realize that you somewhat initiated, like, hey, if Greg is interested, I would be interested. I did not know that part of the story. That's interesting to me because I guess this whole time I had just thought, you know, Greg was around and, you know, you. I know you've said that you enjoy doing the post-game stuff and you enjoyed that part of it. So I just assumed Greg put two and two together, asked you. I had no idea it was the other way around. That's interesting.
Listen, Greg and I are basically an old married couple at this point. So the version of our meeting may differ as to whether you have him on or me, but that's how I remember it. He might tell a different story, but there was probably a lot better options, but I was available, and like I said, Greg and I just had a real chemistry right off the bat.
Well, I don't want to say that your quote-unquote real job is not fun, but the basketball portion is probably considered your fun job. For those that don't know, you do have a day job. You don't just go into hiding and only come out when it's time for basketball. What do you do for your quote-unquote real job?
Yeah, I wish this was my real job, just doing the color, but I'm an attorney. I work at a law firm called Dorsey & Whitney. I worked at a few law firms over the years up in Salt Lake, and I've really enjoyed my time at Dorsey & Whitney. I'm a real estate attorney. So let's say, Jason Shepherd, with all that money that you've made here, that you wanted to be a developer or buy an apartment building or at least some office space, you could come to me and I could help you manage through the contracts and the negotiations and things like that. So I'm a real estate attorney, and it's been a great job for me, and it has allowed me, the places I've worked has allowed me to do the radio, and I miss minimal games. I usually have to miss a couple a year, but hopefully that's minimal, and now with technology and being able to travel with your computer and work from anywhere, it's less that I have to miss. And so it's provided a great life for me and my family, and has allowed me to do the broadcasting, and so it's been a perfect fit. And I'm not going to tell you that sitting at a desk drafting leases all day is exciting and fun. So I needed a little excitement in my life, and the sports and the broadcasting has certainly provided plenty of that.
Where did the interest in law come from? Would it be a stretch to say, because you're not the only lawyer in your family. You happen to have in your family the Chief Justice of the Utah Supreme Court, your brother. Yeah. Is that a tie-in to make, or is this just something that happened?
Yeah, so like some athletes, my entire life was about basketball, and then it was over. And I thought, I probably could have played in South America or Europe. Wouldn't have made very much money. It wasn't as developed as it is now, where you can have a nice career and do some things professionally. And I wasn't a top player, so I could have done that. I decided I wanted to. I was married. I wanted to get my life started. My other career started. And like you said, my brother, amazing. Mind and man, Matt, Chief Justice of the Utah Supreme Court, was a lawyer at the time, and so that was the impetus for me going to law school. And Jason, I have made the mistake in my life of the things that I've chosen to do. My brothers and father are like so far ahead of me. Those I can never possibly measure up to them. So I chose to play basketball, And I have an All-American brother that's one of the all-time greats. And so I thought my first name growing up till I was like 10 is Devin's little brother. And so I could never be as good as Devin at basketball, and I could never be as good in the legal field as my brother Matt is, who's just brilliant. And my father is a great man in the church, and so I try to be a good church-going man, but I'll never be the man that he is. And so it can lead to a lot of insecurities in your life if you have a family like I have. But they're just all so magnificent, and I just love them. And I have you can't help but just feel good and not have any jealousy because they're such tremendous people. My sisters and my brothers are just. And my parents are so amazing. And so, I mean, I'm a little insecure about that. But I do have two things that they don't have. I have the broadcasting, which mm-hmm. is my own. And I am a better golfer than anyone in my family, except for my daughter.
I was going to say, you may be second in the family.
Which I'm thrilled about. I'm thrilled to be second to her. But anyway, it's an interesting dynamic to have such talented people around you. But I'm so grateful for them.
Well, and we're going to get into some of those things that you just brought up in a second. But I do want to start. You mentioned your daughter. I want to start with your immediate family. And you've got a title, you know, as lawyer, and you've got, you know, color analyst. But you also have a title of husband, father, father-in-law, and grandpa. By the way, is that what they call you, grandpa, or do you have like a certain name?
So far, it's grandpa. It hasn't evolved into any other like pop-ups or anything. It's just grandpa.
Okay, so you have all those. What do those titles mean to you?
Well, let's start with being a grandfather. I had no idea how magnificent that would be. I mean, Jason, I'm so excited for you. It's just been such pure joy. I've got little Maven and little Atlas, and they live up in Blackfoot, Idaho, to my son George's wife, Laurel, and we get to see them maybe once a month or so, but they are just the pure light of my life. I just love those kids. And then, being a father, I think, is probably the greatest honor we have on this planet. And to get a little bit spiritual with you, to be able to share the title of Father with our Heavenly Father, and to join with Him in bringing spirits into this world, and then just seeing them grow and develop, and you have the heartache that you experience His heartache when they make mistakes, and you experience His joy when they do good things and make the right decisions. And my sons, George and Jordan and Dane, are everything I dreamed that they would be. And my only hope as a father, Jason, was that my kids would be good. I just want them to be good. And they are pure goodness. And my daughter Stratton, who's a little bit of a straggler, she's the only one left in the house. She's 15, is the best of all of them. And she's my favorite. And I'll tell all my kids that straight to their face. Having a daughter is really something special. And I get to play a lot of golf with her. She's a tremendous golfer. Her name's Stratton, and she plays at Bingham High and is one of the top players her age in the state. But just spending hours together, just me and her out on the golf course, and that is some sacred time right there, Jason. So I know you like to take your kids on trips and things. Just spending time with your kids is just the best. So all the other things are secondary. I'm a family man. I'm a father and grandfather, and that's by far the most important thing to me. I just love it.
And you've been blessed with an unbelievable wife, your wife Marilee. Boy, you lucked out, my friend.
Well, you know, a lot of people say she got pretty lucky. I know. Well, actually, no one says that, but I think it's something somebody could say. She's magnificent. She is. I just love her so much. I can't believe how much I still love being with her, and we just—it's just an amazing thing. And to share in the adventure of life with someone, and build things, and have kids together, and it's another great blessing. I mean, I'm talking a lot about blessings, but Heavenly Father, I think I'm His favorite, Jason, because He's given me so many blessings, and I hope you feel that way about yourself—that you know you feel like your Heavenly Father's favorite, because you are, and we're all His favorites. But man, She's just the pure kind and good, and I was smart enough when I was young to know she's gorgeous, she's beautiful, but I thought I want to marry someone that's going to be a great mom, and she is the greatest mom. And it's almost, I get a little jealous of her as well. You know, another thing that I've chosen to be, I want to be a parent, and yet I could never be as good a parent as my wife is. And I think I'm a pretty nice, open father, but my kids always go to my wife to talk. And because they, it's just something special
about
a mom.
It's something about mom.
It's like, what about me? I've got insight. I have compassion, but it's always about mom. And that's right, because that's how I was. And my dear mom, who passed away quite a while ago, we had a special relationship. And there's nothing more special than having a close relationship with your mother.
Let's talk about you growing up. You were born in right here in Provo, correct? Talk to me a little bit about growing up, because you were born here, but at a certain point when you were young, you guys ended up moving to Kentucky and the Tennessee area because your parents served as mission leaders for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So talk to me about your upbringing.
Yeah, when I was very young, like under two, my father, who was just in his early 40s at the time, was called as a mission president. Can you imagine that, Jason?
That's young.
I can't imagine being called at 53, but he was called at that young age. He'd always been working in the church and teaching in the church. And so he had eight kids, and we loaded up the brown station wagon and went out to Kentucky for
family truckster on the way out to Kentucky, right?
Yeah. And it turned out really well. I mean, Devin was starting high school there and got to get some Kentucky basketball blood in him a little bit to come home when he went to Provo High. But we went to Kentucky on a mission as a family and had a great experience there. But the one thing that's interesting is I don't really remember it because I was so little, and I was kind of the only member of the family that didn't, you know, have that memory, have that experience. And then it turns out when I went on my mission, I got called to that same mission, the very same mission home, and slept in the same mission home and swung on the mission home swing and went to the mission office. And so that was a real tender mercy and blessing for me to go back to that mission and have my own experience there. So we went to Kentucky. Then I came back. I lived in Salt Lake a little bit. Went to Churchill Junior High. Would have gone to Skyline High School, but my parents moved back down to Provo, and I went to Provo High, which is where my brother Devin went, who's a superstar All-American there. And I ended up playing at Provo High for Coach Craig Drury, who I love and is an amazing coach, one of the all-time great coaches in Utah high school sports, and so had a wonderful time there. And so, you know, I just didn't want to leave Utah Valley, and I went to Provo High and BYU undergrad and BYU law school, and finally I broke free to get to South Jordan. That's as far away as I could bear to go. That's where we live now, but I certainly have a tender spot in my heart for Utah County.
You mentioned your dad a few minutes ago. Talked about your dad, you know, being one of the mission leaders, mission president. He's also a religion professor at BYU. He's an author. He's done a lot of stuff. And you were talking about, you know, how high of esteem you have for your father, not just because he's your dad, but because of all of the things that he's been able to accomplish. Can you articulate how your dad has influenced you in your life?
Probably not, because I don't think you can fully articulate the kind of influence a man like that would have on someone. And, you know, he's so funny, and he's kind of was renowned in the church for speaking and being funny. He was extremely popular. My first memories are traveling around the country with him. People would invite him to speak to the youth, and I could at one point almost give his talks better than he could, because I'd been to so many. But he just has a way of, everybody loves him. Everyone, there's no guile about him. They know he's pure and are attracted to that, and it's self-deprecating, and they feel like, I can relate to this guy. And So he had a great career teaching, and also wrote many, many books. And so he's just a tremendous man, and he's still going strong. He's in his early 90s, still going strong, and they got a great mind, and still paints and writes, and he'll want me to say that he's very handsome. And he growing up, he used to say, "You go on a mission, it makes you more handsome." And then he'd say, "And I've been on 5." And so he if he gets dressed up in his navy blue suit and coming off all those missions, he's a really handsome guy. But one of the great motivations in my life has been I just want to make my dad proud of me and not disappoint him. And I don't know that he could ever not be proud of me or be disappointed in me, but I just wanted to be good for him. And so I think he's universally beloved by many, many people. He's, as he gets older, kind of the fame that he once had has dissipated a little bit. But it used to be when you walked across the BYU campus, it wasn't Devin or me that was, you know, everybody wanted to stop and talk to. It was my dad. And I just, again, feel like I'm Heavenly Father's favorite. Why do I get George Duran as my dad? That's not fair to, I mean, I don't know. I must have been pretty good in the pre-existence, Jason. I must have been, you know.
Look.
Listen, bud,
look, there's those that made good decisions, and then there's apparently the decisions you made.
But yeah, I mean, I could talk about my dad forever and my sweet mom who surpasses my dad in all respects, and they're just remarkable, and I feel so lucky to have them as my parents.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get into a lot more about the basketball side of your life. We will do that when we return. The guest today here on the Deep Blue Podcast is the great Mark Durant. We'll have more with Mark right after this on BYU Radio. Hey, Cougar fans, this is Jason Shepherd. I hope you're enjoying another season of great interviews here on Deep Blue. If you love Deep Blue, you should check out our other BYU Radio podcasts like Her Why. Lauren McLean talks about everything BYU women's athletics with current athletes and coaches, plus stars from the past. BYU has some of the best women's teams in the NCAA, and you want to hear their unique perspectives. So download and subscribe to Her Why on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find podcasts. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. My guest today, so happy to be talking with Mark Durant. And Mark, now I want to, you've touched on this a little bit in the first part of our conversation, but I want to talk about your time at BYU and your basketball career. So you've already mentioned that while you were, you know, a teen, your older brother Devin was a basketball star at BYU. I want to know, what was that like to live through his career and sort of watch that? Eventually you would have your own, but to kind of watch him as he elevated himself to where he was at, what was that like for you?
It was really cool. My first memories are going to the Marriott Center and watching my brother play and going down and hanging out with Danny Ainge and Fred Trumbo Steve Trumbo and Fred Roberts and Scott Runia, all those guys, and I got to know them as a little kid, and that was, can you imagine how awesome that was for me? And that's where my love for BYU came about, just those early experiences and watching those teams and watching my brother, and I was so proud of my brother, and it really didn't bother me that everyone thought of me, as Devin's little brother. I did want to make a name for myself, but I was just I just felt it was so cool to be his brother, and he was always so great to me. And even after, you know, he was playing in the pros and overseas, he would still help me as I was trying to make a name for myself. And guys like Mike Smith would help me get on games over at the Smithfield House and play in high school. And I had a great high school career. I was pretty good in high school, Jay. I mean, but then college was a little bit tougher. So that's why I always say, you know, I have these great recruits come in. I say, I know they're great, and they are great, but let's see how they make the transition, because it's a big transition to play college basketball.
How hard was that for you?
It was really hard, partly because you know, now guys are smarter, and if you're my size, 6'7", they get you playing point guard right off. But I, when I played, I was bigger than everybody, so I played in the paint. And Provo High, they just throw it to me in, and I would score, and it was so easy. But I never really developed the great ball handling or three-point shot, so I had to kind of change that part of my game, get better at that, but then also decide, listen, I'm playing with guys like Andy Toulson and Marty Haas, and I'm his this little freshman, and I can't dribble or shoot. How am I going to get some playing time? What can I bring to get on the court? And so I knew that, you know, being the type of player that makes other players better would get me time. I'd play hard defense, be a defensive stopper, and set really good screens and make good passes, and so that make Andy Toulson's life easier. And coaches see that, and they value that. And after, you know, 5 or 10 games, I was starting as a freshman because I was doing the things that I felt the team needed. And it wasn't scoring or anything, but just finding a way to contribute and make the team better was my philosophy all along. But it's a difficult transition because, you know, everybody is your size in college. You're not the biggest guy anymore, and you're not the fastest, so you can't jump the highest anymore. And so you've got to find ways to really make yourself indispensable and valuable to your team. And so that's my advice to anybody coming up. Even if they're really good in high school, don't rest on your laurels. You got to find a way to make yourself indispensable.
As you're navigating through high school and you're, like you talked about, really good high school player, and you're getting noticed, were you singularly focused on BYU? Was it always BYU for you because of the family history on and off the court? Or take me through that decision process.
Yeah, there was never any question that I wanted BYU. The question was, did BYU want me? And they weren't sure. But eventually, gratefully, they came around, and Roger Reed had been named the new coach. And I have this great picture of me sitting at my little kitchen table in Provo with my mom and dad and Roger Reed signing my letter of intent. And that was a dream come true for me. That's all I wanted. That was my focus and sole goal. And everybody knew it, and it was just a matter of if BYU was going to let me have that, and I'm grateful that they did, and it turned out really well for me. But yeah, I unlike my brother Devin, who could have gone anywhere as a McDonald's All-American, just, you know, he tells the story of how he was trying to decide where to go to school, and he's down in his bedroom, and all of a sudden this angelic figure in white comes into his room and says, "You're going to BYU." It turns out it was my mom. But the same diff. And once he heard that, he knew he was going there. But for me, I didn't need a vision. I wanted to go to BYU. That was it. I mean, and I would have figured something out otherwise, but that was one of the great days of my life when Roger Reed offered me that opportunity.
Well, and you mentioned Coach Reed, but weren't you originally recruited by Coach Anderson? And then, yeah, obviously, then he steps down, and then Coach Reed takes over. So what was that transition? Did that also add to some of the,
maybe,
like, what's going to happen here?
Maybe. Coach Anderson did recruit me, and mostly Coach Ingersoll, the great Carl Ingersoll, who I love, did some work. And, of course, Roger. And Roger got the job, like Coach Young. You know, I was – my freshman year was his freshman year as head coach. Obviously, he'd been there as an assistant for many years. But, yeah, it you know, there was a lot going on. It was a funny story. And I like Rick Majerus. He was always good to me. But he in that summer, he was just hired. Roger and he both hired that same year. And I'd committed to BYU, but amidst all the hullabaloo that was going on, I didn't think he thought I didn't commit, or that I had backed out of that commitment. And he came down at Provo High and got me out of class to talk to me and give me a pitch for Utah. And I said, "Hey, coach, you know, I've already committed to BYU." And he said, "Oh, we never had this conversation."
Just slowly backs
yeah,
away.
Slowly, like the Homer Simpson meme, he backs into the hedge.
Grass.
But I loved, I went with Lynn Archibald and Jerry Pym and went to the Ute camps. And I'm certainly no fan of the Utes, but I love those coaches, and they were always good to me.
I know that, you know, you talked about BYU was the place that you had always wanted to go to, and it had such an important part of your childhood and your upbringing. When you were able to get on the floor and you've got that BYU logo or those letters on your chest and you're representing the university that you always wanted to go to, what is that like? How do you handle something like that when it is a lifelong dream and then you realize it?
You know, it's interesting, Jason, because it's almost another life at this point for me. But at the time, it was amazingly special. I remember one of our first games was against Utah State, and so that was a big game, obviously. And it was at the Merritt Center, and it was packed. You know, it was a big game, and we were down after about 5 minutes. We were down like 20 points. So, Coach Reed called timeout and very lovingly said that we need to start playing better. Yeah, very calmly and lovingly.
That was a quote, correct? Yes, I'm sure.
And so after that timeout with our butts chewed, we decided to play a little bit harder. And our strategy was we're going to kind of clear out the floor, give the ball to Marty Haas, and just let him do his thing. He had one of the great games of his career. He just single-handedly brought us back in the game. But as the game got closer and closer, with 22,000 in the stands, you know, it would get louder and louder, and they could feel the comeback. And you've been in those environments, and the crowd's going crazy, and we get closer and closer, and with about 2.5 minutes to go, we're down by 1 point, and we have the ball. So we're coming down. I'm in the game, and I cut to the basket, and Andy Toulson passes me the ball, and I go in, and I lay it up, and the ball goes in the basket, Jason. And I've never in my life heard anything so loud. 22,000 people screaming and yelling because I, Mark Durant, had just made a basket. And I thought, this is it. This is everything I dreamed about.
It's never going to get any better than this.
And it hasn't. No, but and I ran back down the floor, and my feet didn't touch the ground, and it really was a special, magical moment. And as I ponder back on that now and reflect on that, it was a great moment on its own. We've seen those kind of moments much better than that one, but the real satisfaction I think from that is that I had made that same shot thousands of times when no one was there to cheer, and in order for me to put myself in a position where I could make it where it mattered, I had to spend hours and hours in a gym by myself. And so I think that's really where the greatness of the moment comes for me personally, is that I knew what it took to get there, and then to achieve that was really something. So anyway, I mean, certainly I'm not going to brag about my career. I did play hard. I tried to make others better. I tried to help the team win, and we had some really good teams. But I was, you know, very average player, and that's one of the things I really value about doing the radio, is I feel like I really didn't, you know, contribute where I wanted to on the court. But now after almost 30 years, I feel like I've contributed to the greater BYU sports universe, and I feel like I've made a contribution there, which makes me happy, and fans are great to me and make me feel appreciated, and makes me feel like I'm still a part of BYU sports, which means so much to me. So it's been a great blessing.
During your time at BYU, you know, you mentioned some of your teammates, and I want to ask you about one specific teammate coming up in a second. I'll get to that, but first, during your time at BYU, you go to the NCAA tournament, I believe 3 out of 4 years. The other one, you go to the NIT. Is there a moment or is there a game? I know athletes get asked this all the time, but do you have that moment that really sticks out to you during your career?
Well, if you follow me on Twitter or know me at all, I'm not a big fan of the Utes. So we had a great rivalry. I mean, with Majerus and Roger Reed, these two great coaches, and they would come down and we'd call out their play, and then we'd go down, they'd call out our play. I mean, it was just high-level coaching and playing. So we kind of split games with them, but we had a game at the Huntsman Center where Robbie Reed hit a deep three late, and the celebration after that was probably the greatest moment that I had as an athlete at BYU. And then, yeah, I mean, going to the NCAA tournament, we won a game in the tournament, and so, yeah, there were a lot of great experiences. But I would say the great moment, the T.J. Haas moment that we had with Houston, I mean, yeah. That surpasses
level.
All understanding was Robbie Reed hitting that big shot to beat Utah at the Huntsman Center. That was pretty cool.
Not bad at all. All right, so I told you I was going to ask you about one specific former player. And knowing you like I do, I know that you've had a lot of teammates and a lot of friends, but one of the closest, if not maybe the closest, that you are with is Russ Larson. You and Russ Larson, you have said many, many times, on air and off, that Russ is your best friend.
Yeah.
Why is Russ your best friend? What does that relationship mean to you?
Well, that's going to be hard for me. I just love Russell so much. We met, we had an all-star team that played the junior Russian team that came to U.S. was touring, and so Sean Bradley and Russ and Ryan Cuff and a bunch of others of us played against them, so I got to know Russ a little bit. And then we came on our recruiting trip to BYU together, and we just hit it off. I mean, that's one of the great blessings of playing sports is the brotherhood. I just went to the reception of Kurt Christensen's son, and he's my brother, and I just have such great love for him. But Russell's special to me. He's a remarkable man. He's extremely humble, hilarious, kind, good, everything you'd want in a man. Reminds me a lot of my father, and was an amazing player. I feel like his career didn't go as far as it should have. He had a shoulder injury his senior year that not a lot of people knew about, which I think limited his ability to go forward and play in the pros. But I thought he was a Andre Karolinko type player. I thought he could have had a nice career in the pros, and just didn't work out for him in that regard. But he was an all-time player, and I tell people when we introduce Russell that he's one of the top scorers in BYU history, and I passed him the ball for the majority of those points, or set a screen for him in the majority of those points. So I share in his success because I tried to make him better, and he didn't need my help because he's an all-time great. But man, what a better person. I just thank Heavenly Father. I want to shout on the rooftops that I know Russell Larson, because he's just pure goodness and is a magnificent man. And that's as special as he is. You see a lot of those guys coming through here, and you know, a guy like Jimmer, just always so kind and good and generous with his time. And I could go down 100, 200 young men that are just amazing, amazing young men that I don't think is unique to BYU, but it's BYU gets its fair share of those guys. So that's another part of what I love doing about the radio, is just to interact with these young men. And, you know, BYU's got some exciting new faces. I can't wait to meet these guys.
Yeah.
And you just think, how can we ever replace this guy? And then the next guy comes, he's better and a better person. So, but yeah, that's a long-winded question. But Russell is my dear, dear friend, and who would have known that a guy from Clearfield and a guy from Provo could get together and be such good friends? But he means everything to me.
Well, you touched on this, and it's a perfect segue to kind of wrap things up. We've touched on your broadcasting career, which is still going strong. We touched on your playing career. Let's talk about this new team, because to say that there is a level of excitement that we haven't seen in a while for BYU basketball, that would be an understatement. When Mark Pope left BYU, there was a sense of dread and gloom. And within a very short period of time, all that doom and gloom is gone. The sky is blue. The sun is out. And the enthusiasm for BYU basketball and what head coach Kevin Young and his staff has done with this program in a short period of time is remarkable. What do you make of everything we have seen that's gone on in such a short period of time?
Well, you're right. I mean, when Mark Pope left, I was devastated. I love Mark Pope. I think he's a tremendous coach, and they had a great year last year. Everything seemed, you know, we had a lot of people coming back. Everything is looked, you know, very optimistic, and then he leaves, and guys are, you know, hitting the portal, and you're like, how can we ever recover from this? And that was one of the darkest times I've had as a broadcaster. It's like, oh, you know, another BYU moment where we was in reach and then it just evaporates. But I credit a lot of people. And I don't know exactly what went on this behind the scenes, but I think there's a mind shift of administration, of the church, and of you know, just approach and a commitment to want to really be good and be in the Big 12 and really compete and compete at the NIL. And just the fact that they got Coach Young was a statement that they could, you know, entice someone like that for lifestyle and with money and pay him commensurate to what he deserved. And then you just have to really credit him for what he's done. I mean, it's remarkable. Usually the BYU model, at least when I played, was, you know, you bring in kind of medium talent and just try and get them to play the right way and hard, and then you'll have success. And now you're getting so many big names. Another great name today, and now it's a. It's an abundance of talent. Now it's like, how can you kind of take all this amazing talent and focus it? That'll be the challenge for Coach Young. He's almost been flawless in everything he's done, and you're competing with the best schools in the country, legitimately competing for these recruits, and you're getting so many high-level players in. But now I suspect Coach Young is an amazing coach, but now the only thing left for him to do is now to coach these guys, and we'll see how he does. But there's no reason not to be unbelievably optimistic about this team. And everyone I talk to is just out of their minds excited about BYU basketball, and I love that. I love that. I can't wait to see him play, and I credit those guys that like Trevin and Richie and Dallin that stayed. And now you bring in these other great talented players, and I hope that this will now be a destination for good players like that, and they see this as a place where they can come and thrive, and you know, have a great showcase of their talents and go to the next level. I mean, that's what I've always dreamed about for BYU, and there's been a lot of people that have made that happen and have had to change long mindsets on how you should do it. I mean, this is a radically different approach that we're seeing from BYU on how to do this. And so far, it's been amazing.
Yes, it has. I think everybody is in that same boat. Just the enthusiasm for BYU basketball is unbelievable right now. Speaking of unbelievable, Mark, you are unbelievable.
I love you so much, Jason. You're such a great man, and you got a beautiful family. And I know how much you love BYU, and kind of been your dream to be here doing what you're doing. I'm just so happy for you that you've been able to realize that, and you do great work, and I love doing stuff with you in any way. I just want to make sure you know how I feel about you.
Well, I appreciate that, and I've told you this before. You are probably one of the most gentle and genuine people that I have ever met, and to be able to call you a friend is a fantastic accomplishment, because you are one heck of a guy, and I appreciate what you said, and I hope you know how much you mean to me as well.
Well, I just want to start crying. Cleon will make
fun
of us.
Hey, I got some tissues over here that we both may need to use. Should we just wrap this up now before we start to cry?
Cleon's in there playing this little violin in the other room. No, thank you. I mean, means a lot to me.
I appreciate you coming in. This was a blast, and I'm glad we were able to get this done and get you in here today.
Thanks for having me. I can't believe I got invited.
Well, if you're up for it, maybe we'll have a part two down the line. Who knows?
Love it. All right. I'll try to do something exciting in the meantime.
Okay. Thanks once again to my guest, Mark Durant. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.